Tonight is June 8th at Shavei Tefillah. We're learning Masechet Sukkah, Mishnah, of course, Chapter 1. And hopefully we're going to cover the 5th Mishnah and the 6th Mishnah of the chapter, which is Mishnah Hei and Mishnah Vav. A very short review of what we did last time. We've talked about the requirements for building a Sukkah. We've talked about certain basic needs, that without them it's not a building in any sense. We said a sukkah has to be some type of binyan, has to be some type of structure. It has to be a binyan arai, a temporary structure. There first has to be a structure. Without a certain number of walls, without a certain degree of roof, without a certain degree of strength, it's nothing. But on the other hand, it can't be too much. And we're within the boundaries there between nothing and too much. We talked about building a sukkah in a house, building a sukkah under a tree, building a sukkah that's protected by a sheet over it or underneath it. And all of those things we said are out of bounds. Remember, we had said that a sukkah that has a tent inside of it, a tent in the sense of a structure that has two walls but not a roof, because the two walls come together at a point, that actually is okay, because you don't have a roof intervening between you and the sukkah. You have just a point. But had you had a roof, like a sheet that was strung there like a chuppah, or like a bed that has a canopy over it, a canopy that is horizontal, that is not acceptable. Last time we talked about Mishnah Dalet, the 4th Mishnah, which is on the top of the page that we have in front of us, according to the printing of the Mishnah, the edition of Chanuch Albeck. It talks about the basic requirements for sukkah, which we learned are threefold. It has to grow from the ground. It cannot be manufactured into a kli. And thirdly, it has to be talush and not mechubar. It has to be uprooted from the ground or cut, and it can't be still connected. So again, the three rules are: it has to grow from the ground. That means that animal skins are not acceptable. It means that wool is not acceptable. Growing from the ground would be leaves and branches, things like that. It can't be manufactured into a kli, can't be manufactured into something that's readily usable by human beings. It has to still be in its natural state, and the way we state that in halachic language is that it can't be mikabel tuma. It can't be a receptacle, that's not a good word, it can't be susceptible for ritual tuma. What is susceptible for ritual tumah? Something that has been manufactured and is usable by human beings. So just to say that again, it has to be, number one, grown from the ground. It has to be not manufactured into a usable item for human beings. Number three, it has to be cut from the ground. It can't be still connected and growing. Those are the three conditions we saw. We also talked last time about the rule. We talked a little bit about this rule, ta'asei velo mina asui, which means make it, it can't be made. The verse says, hagasukot ta'aselecha, make for yourself hagasukot. And Chazal understood that verse to mean make for yourself a sukkah. You have to make the sukkah, and the sukkah can't be automatically made. What does that mean? The classic example is something that is acceptable for schach, but you didn't put it up on the roof for the intention of it being for a sukkah, and therefore it's no good. We learned also that you need intention. But then what happens if you change your intention? You had this chach that's good. It's on a roof of something. And it looks like a perfectly kosher sukkah. But it wasn't done for the purpose of chach. So it's no good. But then you change your intention. So now it is good. But the problem here is the following. That what makes it good? Your intention. But there's a rule. You have to do something. It has to be done by you and not automatic. And therefore, if you change your intention, it's still not good. You change your intention to make it for the purpose, l'shem sukkah, it's still not good until you do an action. So you have to pick the schach up and put it down. So it's made by you, and it's not automatically created by your kavanah. It has to be made by human hands as a sukkah. And that's a rule that we learned last time, not in the Mishnah, but we learned it while talking about the Gemara. And that's enough of a review, so we can now go on. There's a commotion, something's happening bad out there?
No, they don't know that we are here, so they're talking in the natural voice.
Yeah, but if my wife and Jeremy are not in, it means something happened.
Yeah, your wife and Jeremy are there.
It means something happened. But I guess they don't need us.
Talking to each other.
Okay.
I'm going to drink a little bit.
Okay. So we'll take a 5-10 second break until we begin the Mishnah, which is Mishnah Hey.
I don't know, they're running around over there. One is chasing the other. I don't know who's chasing
okay.
Who. It's difficult to say.
So Mishnah Hey.
Well, can I just, are you going to wait for a second for them? Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes, please ask.
So in 4 it says, if there's more valid, or I'm reading English obviously,
yes.
More valid covering than these, referring to what was invalid, I think, or if he severed them, the vines, then it's valid. So forget the severing part.
Mm-hmm.
If there was more valid covering than invalid, is that a fair way to say it?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
The roof is valid.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that, for example, I can have something which is manufactured as part of the roof. It's not a majority.
Right. It would seem from here that if 49% of the schach is invalid and 51% is valid,
mm-hmm.
then under certain...
He fell asleep under the table, and the table is locked because you can see him.
We searched like the whole shul several times over.
Okay. Okay. And 51% of the schach is valid. It would seem that it says that the sukkah is now valid. There's discussion in halacha, and it would appear that that's the case if the schach that's not good and the schach is good is intermingled. But if they were both recognizable, then it might not be good.
Okay.
But again, this isn't halacha, this is the first
yeah.
station Mishnah, but that seems to be the rule.
Okay.
So now we're beginning the new material for today, Mishnah Hey, the fifth Mishnah, which is on the right-hand side of the page we have put aside in front of us. It says 260 and 261 at the bottom. This is page 260. Mishnah Hey, beginning with the words, Chavilei Kash.
English.
Chavilei Kash. The Mishnah begins, Chavilei Kash v'chavilei etzim v'chavilei zradim ein misakachin behem v'chulan shitiran ksherot v'chulan ksherot ladfanot. Very short Mishnah. Translation. The first word is Chavilei, which is a construct form. The Chavilim is the plural and Chavila is the singular. A Chavila is a package or a bundle, and Chavilim are bundles. Chavilei Kash means bundles of straw or hay. I personally don't know the difference between straw and hay, but I remember learning, I think in 5th grade music class, there's a difference between them. I certainly remember now, goodness gracious, a song about a soldier who couldn't distinguish between left and his right foot. But then the commander put straw on his left foot and hay on his right foot and just said, straw, hay, and then he knew which foot to put in front of him. But I don't remember myself which is straw and which is hay.
The one on your left foot is straw.
That's it. Was it the right foot?
Back in the 1950s, there used to be after 56 campaign where Egypt lost,
Yeah.
There was a joke going on in Israel, and this was back a long time ago.
Yeah.
Is that the Egyptian army, in order to teach them how to march, left, right, left, right, they would give him onion, like scallion in one hand, the tomato and the other one, and you say, Basil Bandura, Basil Bandura.
So that's pretty similar to what I remember from the, this from the Civil War, I think.
But they can really tell the difference between basil and
tomato.
Onion and tomato.
Okay, so bundles of straw and bundles of sticks and bundles of brambles. Zradim are like brambles. Vines or thorns or little branches.
Okay.
Bundles of straw and bundles of sticks and bundles of brambles. Then the last three words of the line, Ein misakachin behen. We don't make schach from them or of them. And then the second line, V'chulan shehitiran ksherot. And all of them, when he undid them, shehitiran, that he undid them,
untied
them, ksherot. They're all ksherot.
Makes sense.
And then three more words, v'chulan ksherot latfanot, and all of them are kosher for walls.
When they bundle.
Let's go stage by stage. So I have a number of questions that I asked on the sheet, and we'll go stage by stage. The first question is, when the object kulan appears for the first time, right, that's the beginning of the second line, and all of them, when he undid them, are ksherot, what is it referring to? That's the easiest question in the world, right?
Bundles.
The bundles, right? The three different types of bundles, of straw, and of sticks, and of brambles. All three of these types of bundles, when he undid the bundles, so he just has straw on top, or brambles on top, or sticks on top, it's absolutely positively kosher. Because, going back to the rules we had last week, these certainly grow from the ground, they're certainly in the natural, unmanufactured state, and they're certainly not mechubar, not connected, but rather talush, unconnected from the ground. So it has to be kosher. Very good. Question number two. According to what we learned up until this point, would we have thought that these havilot are acceptable or that they are not acceptable for schach? What would you think about these havilot, about these packages, before you read the Mishnah?
It's kosher.
Right. Of course you think it's kosher. What's wrong with these bundles? They're bundles of straw. Straw is kosher. Sticks are kosher. What does it matter if you bundle them or didn't bundle them? What does it matter?
I would not have.
You would disagree?
Well, from my perspective, I would not have thought that they would be kosher because they have been altered for a different purpose than being schach. They were tied together for the purpose of transport, to be so that they don't fall apart.
Right.
So they were the kavanah was to hold them together, not to be used as schach originally.
Very good. So in other words, as far as the technical requirements, the physical requirements, it's kosher. But there might here be an issue of kavanah, because this isn't schach, this is a bundle that's for storage or for drying.
Well, not only this, but bundle of straw is also used for different purposes, like to feed horses and cows.
Well, straw is also used for that. The fact it's in a bundle, you're saying, makes it more obvious that it's for this other purpose. Okay, so Yoram is right, and Ayel is also right. The physical requirements of schach, the bundles meet that. But there might be an issue of kavanah. We did learn earlier that you have to have made the sukkah, l'shem sukkah, for the purpose of being sukkah. So we'll have to think about that. Good, right. Three. Yoram just talked about number three. Right? Could you venture a reason why the Mishnah would rule that these chavilot would not be acceptable for schach, given that these chavilot meet all the physical requirements? And Yoram certainly is a good suggestion. Anyone else have a different suggestion?
Well, it's... Actually, I don't understand what you said so far. To me, the question was, is it a utensil? Is it manufactured?
Right, and it's absolutely not utensil.
Okay.
So it should be kosher for schach.
What I didn't understand was, I thought that it had to do with, I'll put it in a very simple way. There's some wood that I found that somebody chopped down. They didn't chop it down for a scot. I just find it. It was left over. It's free. Nobody owns it. I just take it. I put it on for a certain purpose. In the same way, there's a bundle of straw. It wasn't bundled for a scot, but so what? I put it on as intending it for it to be scot. So I don't understand why you say...
Answer him.
Okay.
By the way, I'm not saying that he's right. I'm just trying to see what he's going to say.
The act of bundling, okay, is a preparation for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. In this case, the purpose was to transport it. In other words, to take it from one place to the other.
Okay.
Furthermore, if you leave it tied on top of the sukkah, there is definitely the intention that you're going to have further use for it after Sukkot. Because you're keeping it bundled so you can carry it for the horses or some other...
I kind of don't understand any of that, really, because if I have a pile of sticks for firewood out in the back, are you saying that I can't... I've organized them and I've piled them up for the purpose of firewood. Can't I now say... it's sukkah, time to build my sukkah, I'm going to take this wood and make my scarf. Why can't that?
No, that's fine. But you
but I organized them.
But if you tie them in a bundle, according to the Mishnah, if you tie them into a bundle...
But I'm saying, what we learned earlier, but we didn't learn that earlier, that you can't tie stuff in a bundle.
No, we've never mentioned anything like that.
Okay.
But the wood that you want to use, you can use because you can have kavanah to use it for schach. Here is chavilei kash, maybe you find it outside. It's not belong to you.
But it doesn't say what you're saying.
Yeah.
I would add that in David's example of the firewood, to make it parallel to the case of the bundles of straw, what if you had the firewood and you put a sign on it that said, this is for firewood. And you left the sign on when you put it on the top of the sukkah. Uh-huh. Undoing the bundles is like taking the sign away. Now, what does that matter? I'm still not clear 100% why that matters. But that would make it parallel. So it has to go back to this kavanah matter in some sense, in some way.
Well, it's also the fact that you keep it bundled indicate its work in progress. It's not in its final form. Therefore, there is further processing associated with it.
Why do you say it's not in its final form? I'm not sure.
If you keep something bundled, right?
I thought it's just normally, now I'm going to take it and throw it out in the yard for the cows to eat. It's in final form. It's just easier to handle.
That means your intention was not just to be 100% for the sukkah schach, it was, well, from Tuesday till a week from Tuesday, it'll be schach, and then it'll be something else.
So you're saying that's not permitted.
You bundled it to transport it from where you got it to put it on your schach.
So then undo the bundles.
You have to undo the bundle.
Why do the only reason we undo the bundles is because of this Mishnah.
Is there something...
He might be right. Why undo the bundles? Why?
Because the Mishnah.
Is it being bundled? Does it being bundled somehow interfere with the concept of it being in sort of its natural state?
No.
There's some sense of not quite manufactured, but having done something to it when you bundle it.
Well, I think that originally we talked in the previous Mishnah. We talked about. That the schach cannot be in any shape form a kli.
Okay, but this is not a kli.
It's not a kli.
No, but it's in the process of becoming something that will be useful for something other than schach.
Yeah, but it's not becoming a kli. It's becoming perhaps firewood, or becoming food.
Examples. You gave an example of bamboo sticks that are intertwined, that can be used as a rug as well as for sukkah. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to take a bunch of sticks and you're going to you know, connect them together, and you say, well, let me use a stronger string, because after the sukkah, I'm going to use it as an entrance in front of my house.
But what if you bundled it for the purpose of taking it where you found it and putting it on your schach? The only reason then that you unroll it is because of this Mishnah, not because of any real...
Okay, so we hear the different factors. Let's see more material.
But when he used it for one, he used it for sukkah, for the schach, and after the chag, he wants to use it for something else. What the problem?
Okay. Okay.
We'll find out.
Question 4. Might the referent of the word kulan, when it appears the second time in this Mishnah, be different than when it appeared the first time in this Mishnah? So notice in the second line of the Mishnah, it began with the word kulan, shetiran ksherot, all of them, when he undid them, are kosher, and was talking about schach. And then it said again, v'kulan ksherot letfanot, and all of them are kosher pritfanot. So clearly, it means at least, in the last three words, that all of them, all of these bundles, are kosher for tfanot, and it doesn't say hitiran, doesn't say that he undid them. It means that these bundles are kosher for tfanot. You can clearly make your schach out of bundles of hay that you line up to make a wall, another wall, another wall. That's fine, right? Mm-hmm. That's absolutely fine. But I'm asking now, can that word chulan mean something beyond that? Beyond the bundles. And you have to remember, of course...
It could mean all anything.
Anything.
Right? All things.
And I need to remember two things. Remember that we've said that the Mishnah was edited, when it was edited by Rabbi Donasi, into Starim, and into Mesechtot, and into Prakim. Yes. But the division into separate Mishnayot is later. Which means that when you are reading it in its original form, you don't know that Mishnah Hey is separate from Mishnah Dalad or Mishnah Gimel or Mishnah Bet or Mishnah Aleph. It's all one unit. Mm-hmm. And it says all of them are ksherot fedfanot. Well, we've discussed a lot of things that are not kosher for schach. And now we might be told that all of those things, right, whether it's sheets, the sheets that are not good for schach, and it's the branches that are mechubar, they're still connected to the ground. It could be all those things, and those things that are mikabel tumah, those things that are susceptible to ritual impurity, all of those things are kosher for tfanot. Halachically, that's true. And is that what the Mishnah is saying? It's not clear. But it could be saying that all of these things, not just the Mishnah Hey, but also Dal and also Gimel and also Bet, all of these things are ksherot for tfanot.
Basically, if you make the walls out of just about anything, as long as it doesn't have, as long as you don't overdo the permanency.
Actually, that's not true. Oh, the wall can also be made of 10 feet wide stone.
So the walls can be permanent.
The walls can be permanent.
So you can take the red trees and put them like...
Absolutely. Absolutely, right? The walls can be made of grape trees that are still living, can be made of...
The walls of your house.
Walls of your house.
Can be made of...
I'm not sure you can use human beings. Just about anything else.
Oh, it's covered by rocks.
By rock. By rocks.
Okay. And of course, if we were to know that the meaning of these last three words, v'chulan ksheot letfanot, all of these things, going back to Mishnah Bet, if we were to know for certain that its intention was to say all of these things, then we would be able to extract from these last few words the principle that anything, just about anything, is kosher for tfanot. And with that, we can now see what the Talmudim say about this Mishnah.
Can you just ask one thing about the fact that the Mishnah specifies straw and sticks and brambles, does that imply that those are the only bundled items that would be excluded, that if you bundled, say, firewood that doesn't, you know, that may not fall under one of these, that would be acceptable?
Firewood would still be
Or maybe it sticks?
Well, I think it chose these three examples because these are the three things that they tended to bundle. Mm-hmm. But does it apply to other bundles? That will be dependent upon our understanding of why, what the psul is here, what the problem is here. And that mm-hmm. brings us right to the Talmud Yerushalmi. You may. Just one, though.
No, the fact that it uses the Kulan the first time, meaning that all, like if there were going to be 10 bundles, he must untie all 10, correct? If he unties 9 and leaves 1 up there, okay, then it makes the entire Schach Pasul?
That's a good question. It relates to what David said about 15 minutes ago, that percentages. But percentages.
What about the 51%?
Right.
Well, but have to be intermingled.
But I'd mentioned that perhaps it has to be intermingled. If the schach that is pasul is identifiable, then it might... I don't want to give an answer because I can't give an answer. The halakha is far removed from the basic Mishnah. It's hard to know what the Mishnah held, but we will see that this rule of 51% comes up again and again and again. So let's wait for that. So we're looking now at B in the sheet, and the first source there is Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet Sukkah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Vav. In the Yerushalmi, our Mishnah is Vav. In the way it's printed in front of us in Aldek, it's Hey. We're talking the same Mishnah. And what the Talmud Yerushalmi says on this Mishnah is as follows. I'm reading from the source that I brought, Gemara. Rabbi Chia b'shem Rabbi Yochanan. Mipeneshi niret ke'otzar.
No,
ke'otzar? No. So this is Rabbi Chia and the name Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is a first generation Amora of Eretz Yisrael. He lives in Tiberia, city of Tiberias, about the year 200. And Rabbi Chia is quoting what he heard from Rabbi Yochanan, and it's only four words. Because it looks like a, how do you say this in English? A storage.
Like a storage.
It looks like storage. Otsar. It looks like storage. So first of all, it's important to see that according to Rabbi Chia in the name Rabbi Yochanan, this is a matter of it looks like. In other words, this is an Isur de Rabbanan. I shouldn't use the word Isur. This is a Gzeira de Rabbanan. In other words, Doraita, it's fine. It meets all the requirements of Schach. Rather, it doesn't look good. Because it looks like you just put it up there to store it. And people will think that it's not a real sukkah. So according to the Yerushalmi, this isn't a law d'oraita, it's only a gzeira d'rabbanan. Because it looks like storage, doesn't look like a sukkah.
Marit ayin,
like marit ayin, right? It doesn't look like a sukkah. We're going to see that the Bavli has a slightly different take on things. But before we get to the Bavli, let's just see the next line in the Yerushalmi, which deals with an interesting question. Rabbi Yaakov bar Avya and Rav Sheshet b'shem Rabbi Chia Rabba. They both said the same thing. I had meant to put a comma, and it looks like I put a period there. After Rabbi Yaakov bar Avya, I meant to put a comma. So Rabbi Yaakov bar Avya, at the same time Rav Sheshet b'shem Rabbi Chia Rabba, they said the following: Ein chavila pchuta michafhei. A bundle is not less than 25 sticks.
So if it's less than 25, it's okay.
Yeah. So they're dealing with an interesting question. No one brought up earlier. Like, what's a bundle? And if I have two sticks I tie together, is that a bundle? What's a bundle? So they say 25 or more is a bundle. Less than 25 is not a bundle. Okay? Let's see what the Bavli does with this. The Bavli does something rather complicated with this. So the Bavli says as follows. It says, Talmud Bavli Masechet Sukkah, Daf Yud Bet Amud Aleph, and Amud Bet. And I'll just remind everyone of what I've said in the past, that I'm bringing from the Talmud the parts of the Talmudic discussion on the Mishnah that deal directly with the Pshat of the Mishnah. And I'm leaving out all the other expansions and explanations, just that which deals with the Pshat of the Mishnah as far as I can ascertain. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Shamit Minei, the Rabbi Yochanan Tarti. So the word Shamit is Aramaic, and a good way to understand that Yud Tav ending is to switch around the Yud and the Tav. If it was Hebrew, it would be Tav than Yud. Shamati, I heard. Shamit Minei, I heard from it of Rabbi Yochanan, Tarte, Tarte is two. Like Tre. Like in Hadgadya, my father bought for Tre Zuze, Tre is two. Tarte is the same thing. So, Rabbi Yaakov says, I heard from that of Rabbi Yochanan too. So it means that Rabbi Yochanan said something about our Mishnah. He said two different related things about our Mishnah, and Rabbi Yaakov learned these two things. And what are the two things he learned about our Mishnah? Chadaha, one of them, chada is one, ha, this, one of them is this. Ve'idach achotet bigadish lasot lo sukkah ina sukkah. Someone who burrows in the pile of hay to make a sukkah, it's not a sukkah.
Going down to
yeah. Fast. And if you're a big needle in the haystack, and you burrow underneath, and you make a whole room in the haystack, could that be a sukkah? Well, why not? Right? Why not? Because it grows from the ground, and it's not made into a manufactured item, and it's not connected, so it should be a good sukkah.
And everything's kosher for walls.
Yeah, so it should be fine, right. But it's not.
It's not.
So this statement that if you burrow in the haystack to make a sukkah, it's not a sukkah, that appears actually now in Mishnah. You can look ahead, and this is found in Mishnah Chet. So if you look on the Mishnah sheets, Mishnah Chet, the 8th Mishnah, in the second half of the 8th Mishnah, Achotet Begadish Lasot Bo Sukkah Eina Sukkah. So anyway,
presumably at least because you didn't put a roof on anything.
Rather, the roof became automatically. Yeah. Very good. You got it. That's going to give. Gemara's going to go into that. So in any case, Rabbi Yochanan, and it's not clear what's going on here. It's not clear what's going on. But Rabbi Yaakov says, I learned two connected laws concerning sukkah from Rabbi Yochanan. One of them was our Mishnah, and one of them was Mishnah Chet, about the burrowing. And there's some connection, apparently, between our Mishnah that we're learning right now about the bundles on the roof, on the other hand, the Mishnah about burrowing in the haystack. Rabbi Yochanan saw a certain connection between them. And Rabbi Yaakov goes on to say, it's the last word of the first line, Chada Mishum, I'm skipping a word, Otsar, V'chada Mishum Taseh V'lo Minasui. One of them, because of Otsar, because of storage, and I'm taking out a word there, it's because Professor Hanoch Albeck thinks it flows more smoothly without that word. It doesn't make a big deal, but we'll see. And one of them, because of the rule of ta'aseh, velo minasui. It should be, you should make it, and it can't be automatically made. Velo yadana, and I don't know, hai minayu mishum otzar, v'hai minayu mishum ta'aseh, velo minasui. And I don't know, I don't remember, says Rabbi Yaakov, which of them is because of otzar, and which of them is because of taseh velo minasui. So in other words, again, says Rabbi Yaakov, I was sitting in the classroom in the yeshiva with Rabbi Yochanan, and he brought two connected Mishnayot, and he said that one of them is forbidden because of X reason, and one because of Y reason. I remember both reasons. I don't remember which he said is which and which he said is which. That's what Rabbi Yaakov says about what he learned from Rabbi Yochanan.
One is Mishnah Hey, and one is
Mishnah Het.
Okay.
Right. So first of all, you see that Rabbi Yaakov is as human as we are, and he doesn't remember everything that he learned. And he knows to say exactly what he remembers and what he doesn't remember.
It's not connected to the, if you would love it,
Yeah, that's Tashev Elo Menasui.
So, it's Menasui.
Well, Rabbi Yaakov doesn't know which is which. But using our information and our understanding, right, David already said that the burrowing in the Gadish, in the pile of hay, mm-hmm. sounds like it's going to be a problem of Taseh Velo Menasui, because you're not doing an action to put the Schachan, it's just coming there automatically, because you're taking out from underneath it. And in addition, we already learned the Yerushalmi, that says that our Mishnah of the piles of hay there are a problem of it looks like Otsar, it looks like storage, so everything now seems to fit. Rabbi Yaakov doesn't remember what he learned, but we know better than he does. So we might think that what he remembers that Rabbi Yochanan said of Otsar, of storage, well, that fits with what the Yerushalmi said about our Mishnah, that it looks like storage, so it's no good. And what Rabbi Yaakov remembers that Rabbi Yochanan said about Taseh Velo Menasui, that seems to fit with the eighth Mishnah about the burrowing in the haystack. So it looks like we understand what Rabbi Yaakov doesn't himself completely understand or remember.
Unless they understood the Mishnah differently.
Hey, right.
How the Chavile got there.
Yeah, well, as you see, the Mishnah, the Gemara goes on, so there is more to it. But you're right, it gets more complicated. So now we are in the third line, the third word. And it says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, which is a third rabbi who comes into the discussion. And he says at the beginning two words, Nechzi Anan. So the word Nechzi, it comes from the root Chet Zayin Yud, and it should remind us of the Hebrew Chazon, a vision. Anan means Anachnu, we. What it means is, let's see. Anan is we. Nechzi is we will see. It means let's see. Now it says Rabbi Yirmiya, let's sit down and analyze what we just learned from Rabbi Yaakov, from his lack of understanding of what he remembers, doesn't remember. Let's examine it. So he says as follows. Nechzi Anan, let's see. Damar Rabbi Chia bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Let's see. As said Rabbi Chia bar Abba, the name Rabbi Yochanan. So that means Rabbi Yirmiya is going to bring a tradition he has of Rabbi Chia bar Abba, who is a new person we haven't seen yet in the Bavli. And Rabbi Chia bar Abba said something named Rabbi Yochanan, so it's another tradition of Rabbi Yochanan, which Rabbi Yirm is going to use to solve what we just read about Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Yaakov. So it's near the middle, the end of the third line, and the quote from Rabbi Yochanan is as follows, after my two dots there. Mipnei ma amru chavilei kash v'chavilei etzim v'chavilei zradim ein mesakachin behen. Translation, again this is Rabbi Yochanan speaking. Because of what did they say that bundles of straw and bundles of sticks and bundles of brambles we do not use for schach? Why? Pa'amim shadam ba min asadeh, sometimes that a man comes from the field, be'erev, in the evening, v'chavilato al ketefo, and his bundle is on his shoulder, uma'ala, or ma'aleh, and he puts it up, umaniha, and he lays it, al gebe sukato, and he puts it on his sukkah, kedei liyabsha, in order to dry it. V'nimlach aleya lisikuch, and he changes his mind for schach. In other words, first he puts it there just to dry. Then he says, you know what, it's up there so beautifully and it really makes a nice roof for my sukkah, I'll say that that's schach. V'torah amra, but the Torah said, taseh velo min asui. But the Torah said, make it and don't have it automatically made. Let's think a second. So what did Rabbi Yochanan just say? It's not exactly what the Yerushalmi said, it's something different.
Yeah. He said, well, the Yerushalmi was just more cryptic, maybe. Maybe, or maybe it's different.
Right, two possibilities.
So he's saying, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, we have the rule, you have to intend for it to be schach when you put it on. And using bundles is risky. It's a fence. It's because people come and they just set it there to dry and then leave it. And they think they've got a valid sukkah, which they would have had they put it on there properly, but they didn't, and they don't put it on properly. That's what the fence is.
And therefore, so the fence is, even if you put it originally for schach, it's still not good.
We're not going to allow it because we need a fence.
It gets confused with cases in which people put it for the wrong purpose. And just like David said, this might be an interpretation of what the Yerushalmi said in Rabbi Yochanan's name, but it might be something completely different. Rabbi Yochanan might have meant just that it's a gzeirah, it's a decree, that it just looks too much like storage. Or it could be the more complicated, where the Yerushalmi has it, that it's a gzeirah that's related to taseh velo min asui. It's a gzeirah on the shoulders of taseh velo min asui, right on the back of Masui. That looks like that's the way that Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba interprets Rabbi Yochanan in the Bavli, whereas in the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Chiya and then Rabbi Yochanan had it much more simply. Okay.
Does the Bavli say that basically in that case where he sets it down without kavanah of it being schach and says, oh, it's so nice up there, when it says Torah Amra Taseh Velo Min Asui, is that meaning that if he tries to use it as schach, it's actually deraita, not schach?
Well, if you put it there for the purpose of drying, mm-hmm. and then you change your mind and now have it for the purpose of schach, but you don't do anything to it, so then deraita, it's no good because of Taseh Velo Min Asui. But we're saying that even if you put it for the right reason, right. it's the Rabbanan, not good, because it'll get confused with with the other case.
Okay.
So this gzeirah on the shoulders of the deraita of taseh velo min asui, according to, again, the Bavli's way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. But what is the word, manichah gavei sukkah?
He puts it on the top of his sukkah.
So
I understand, Sen, the sukkah in the sense of just your little... Your tzrif, not sukkah in the sense of something that's designated as a sukkah. Right? It's just a sukkah in your yard that you
machsan.
Use to machsan, a storage place, and you put.
Why
that
are
there.
You saying that?
Because not.
Because if it had been your sukkah, then that would show that your kavanah originally was to make it a schach. Why not?
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me
it says to dry. You put it there to dry.
Yeah, you put. It doesn't matter if it's your sukkah. It is your sukkah. You put it there. In fact, you might already have schach on there. You finished your sukkah. It's all done.
Okay.
You finish. You come and you put this on it to dry on a roof, like you put it on a roof to dry.
Okay. Fine. You're right. Good. So that's what Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said in Rabbi Yochanan's name. And now the sentence goes on, and this is Rabbi Yirmiya learning from that something about our discussion. Midaha mishum zerat otsar. Midaha, that's three words, midaha, from that this, midaha, from that this, is mishum zerat otsar, is because of, quote, zerat otsar, the rabbinical decree of Otsar, Ha mishum taseh velo menasui. That, the other one, the other case, in other words, the person who burrows in the straw, must be because of taseh velo menasui. In other words, remember that we had learned that Rabbi Yaakov learned two different mishnayot from Rabbi Yochanan, and he remembers two different reasons, and he was assuming one reason was for this, and one was for that. So now that Rabbi Chiya bar Abba brought us the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, that our Mishnah today is about this Gzerat Otsar, the Otsar thing, the storage thing, so says Rabbi Yirmiyah, that must mean that the other Mishnah is about Tasevelum Natsui. This should upset you. There's a flaw in this logic. Right?
Can you say if with the English reason given instead of...
Yeah.
Because I don't have it straight, sorry.
So, Gzerat Otsar, the decree of storage, is what Rabbi Yirmiyah says that Rabbi Chiya bar Avni Rabbi Yochanan said about our Mishnah, and therefore using the logic that Rabbi Yaakov remembers, Rabbi Yochanan said two different things, one each Mishnah, so then the other Mishnah of the burrowing in the hay, that must be the Mishnah that Rabbi Yochanan said about it, Taseh velo menasui, that it has to be made and not automatically made.
But it seems like Rabbi Yirmiyah just linked it actually to Taseh velo menasui.
Right, that's the flaw in the logic here, because... not Rabbi Yirmiyah, but Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan, when he said Gzerat Otsar, the decree of storage, that was not just a decree, it was based upon Taseh velo menasui. It's based upon that it has to be done and not automatically created. So what do we have here? We have here a certain tension between what Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Rabbi Yaakov remembers there was two separate reasons, one for each Mishnah, on the one hand, you just can't remember which is which, on the other hand, the way that we have it from Rabbi Chiya bar Abba and Rabbi Yochanan, both reasons apply to one Mishnah. Both reasons apply to one Mishnah. Okay. Say it again? Our Mishnah. Because what we just said now, as opposed to the Yerushalmi that said the matter of Otsar storage is a simple matter, it looks like storage. According to the way we have it in the Bavli, the looks like storage is not so simple. It's rather Tasevelum and Asui, which is expanded to cases in which that doesn't apply, lest we get it mixed up with cases in which it does apply. And that's the meaning of Zerat Otsar. The decree of storage is that you can't use bundles of schach, even if you put them there for that reason, for schach, because you might get it mixed up in cases in which you put it there for a different reason. You put it there only for storage.
Why are you saying that the storage rule is, it can't be automatic? I thought it was a kavanah reason. In other words, if I put a bundle on the roof with the intention of storing it, and then change my mind and do nothing, it's not valid skach because I didn't put it up there with the proper kavanah. Not because it was automatic. It wasn't automatic. I put it there.
No, but now you change your mind.
Now you've changed your mind.
But that's a matter of the fact that I changed my mind doesn't matter. What matters is, when I put it on there, I didn't have the right kavanah.
So we're saying the same thing in different language. You changed your mind.
Well, but I'm saying, there's a difference. Yes, that sort of is saying the same thing. My point is that one is a matter of kavanah when I put it on. Burrowing, I never did put anything on.
Okay.
Or nothing put.
That's
not, I can have the intention of making a sukkah and making this hay I'm going under being the skach. Not good enough. My kavanah doesn't
you didn't
help.
Do any action of putting it there.
I didn't put it on.
Right.
Okay, so let's
so
now
aren't those two different things?
Aren't those two different things? No.
No.
They're not. Because in the case which you put the bundle there for storage, so your action is not relevant to the discussion, because your contention was to put it there for storage. So it's there for storage. Okay, so now you changed your mind and you want it to be for schach. But there's no action involved, because the action that you did is not relevant to our discussion, because when you did that action, it wasn't for sukkah, it was for storage.
And the hay was presumably put there for storage as well.
You have to do something in order to convert the results of an action for a different purpose into an action, into something that is for schach. You actually have to lift it up and put it back down again. You have to physically do something to it to negate your original intention.
Well, I can say that differently, which is, well, I didn't make it into proper schach, but I'm still allowed to make it into proper schach if I put it there with the right intention. I'll go put it there with the right intention.
Yes. Yes.
It says the same thing. I'm with that. Mm-hmm. But I don't see why they're the same thing. They're not the same.
I don't understand the discussion that you're making.
Okay. What I'm... Your analysis that by changing my intention, or by wishing it were so, I didn't do anything... Right? Gee, I wish it were schach. I wish I had put it on there as schach. That's what you're saying. And that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's because... That's not because it's there... That doesn't make it be there automatically. It is not on the roof automatically. It's on the roof because I put it there. Not with good intention. And so it can't be valid. But it's when I put it there that it counts. I can't... That's why I'm saying it's a different rule. The first rule of the storage problem is that not good intention when I put it there. It's a kavana problem. The burrowing is not a kavana problem at all. In the burrowing example, I can have completely perfect kavana, right? I can say, I'm digging this under here to make a sukkah. I want this hay that's going to be above me to be the skach, but and it doesn't do any good. It's not a kavana problem. I have perfect kavana, but I didn't put the straw on.
You didn't make it. You didn't.
I didn't put the straw on.
Like Jeremy said earlier, you did put the straw on.
When I burrowed?
No, before you burrowed.
No, when you put it into storage. You put it there.
You made the pile, right?
Presumably put there.
It could have just been a pile. It doesn't say how
but
it got
why,
there.
But then why did you leave it there? Because you wanted it stored there.
No, but supposing you have a situation like you go to somewhere after a hurricane and it's Sukkot and you say, you know what, this like part of the house has collapsed. I'm just going to remove some of these things and then look, I'll have these branches on top and I'll use this as a Sukkot.
Right.
But if you're removing and haven't put anything up there, then I didn't create this debris
that I...
Right, but it was not created by any intent, you know, it's debris that I figured I can remove, like this old door and these tires, and look, it's just got branches on top.
Look, but as far as halachically speaking, we time it from the moment that we want it to be schach.
So why? Why do you say that?
Why? Because it doesn't exist as schach until you decide that it's schach.
No,
until then, it's just sticks. As soon as you decide it's schach, then that's when you start timing it. So as soon as you say, I want this to be schach, well, then it pre-existed there in that location before you ever decided you want it to be schach. So then you have a problem. Because it's as though it's always been there. It's as though it happened to be there. Do you understand what I'm saying, Rabbi, or not really? No, never mind then.
No, I follow what you're saying.
It's a matter of that I can't put it any different. It works in my head, but it doesn't work in words.
Well, I sort of understood what you're saying, but I don't think that's, I mean, I don't...
I think it's relevant.
I don't think I quite agree with it or see how it works here.
Okay.
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 Moving right along, as we say.
Let's notice a slight difference in the wording in Mishnah Hay and Mishnah Chet, the fifth Mishnah and the eighth Mishnah. The Mishnah we're learning right now says, in the last three words of the first line, Ein misakachin behem. We don't use these for schach. In Mishnah Chet it says, in the second half of Mishnah Chet, Mishnah 8, it says, Hachotet begadish, he who burrows in the straw pile, lasot bo sukkah, to make a sukkah, eina sukkah, it's not a sukkah. Ma?
Like you said the last time.
What is it? Listen. It's not a sukkah. There's a difference in the language. Yes. The language of Mishnah... Yes?
Well, the language is... Are we talking about schach? Or... I mean, we keep conflating this sukkah
right.
And schach.
So it might not matter that here it says schach, here it says sukkah.
But it's been so consistent in using the word schach.
You said that this
up until now, the suddenly changing to the word sukkah.
No, just because in the context it said you did this burning to make it a sukkah, it's not a sukkah. But why is it not a sukkah? Because the schach, the walls are okay. Right? Mm-hmm. But the point is that in Mishnah Hay it says we don't do it. Mishnah Chet says if you did it, it's no good. There's a difference here of l'hatchila as opposed to b'diavad. Again, Mishnah Hay says, don't do it. It doesn't explicitly say, if you did it, it's no good. It just says, don't do it. Mishnah Chet says, don't do it. And we can actually understand that in context of what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Because Mishnah Chet is a pure problem of taseh velo minasui. Mm-hmm. And that's Doraita. It's because by borrowing, it automatically becomes schach, but that can't be. It has to be made by you. So that's Doraita Pasul. Whereas Mishnah Hey, we're saying, is really a Darabanan. It's that you have a problem of Taseh Minasui if your Kavanah was, when you put the bundle up there, that it's for the purpose of storage and now you changed your mind to the purpose of Sukkah. That's Doraita. But we're claiming that our Mishnah is going one step further. Our Mishnah is talking about the case, and even when you put it there for the purpose of sukkah, of schach, it's still no good, because it's a gzerah derabanan in order to prevent us from getting mixed up with case of tashem nasui. So it's only a derabanan, which means don't do it. Don't use these bundles for schach, even if your kavanah was fine. But that would mean that if you did do it, you went against the rabbanan, but you might fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, because the right, it's okay. That's why the language is ein misakachin, but it doesn't say that it's not sukkah, it's not tzach. It is, it's just you shouldn't do it. And that's the last line of our Gemara. That works, the last two lines. Let's count from the beginning of the second to last line. 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth word. Hacha dekatani, here that we learned, ein misakachin behen, we don't use these for schach. Lahatchilahu de ein misakachin behen, it's to begin with, at the outset, that we don't make schach of them, mishum zerat otzar, because of the derabanan, the gzerah, the decree, the gzerah of otzar. Ha doraita shapir dami, behold doraita shapir dami. Shapir Dami means it's very good. Doraita, it's okay? Hatam over there, meaning the burrowing, Dikatani Einasuka, that the language is Einasuka, Afilu Diavad, even Diavad, after the fact, Midoraita, Nami, also Einasuka. It's not a Suka. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of things. So I just thought of my mind here, something funny. Right, so Rabbi Yochanan is claiming that there's a Gzeirat Rabbanan, Gzeirat Otsar, the decree of the storage, and the only way to get around that is to open up the bundles. It's not enough to pick them up and put them down, because they always will look like bundles. You might get it confused with a case which you didn't pick them up and put them down. You have to open up the bundles to prevent any confusion and prevent your fellow from making a mistake of thinking they could just put bundles up there for this purpose of storage and then change his mind, it'll be okay. Don't confuse him, always undo your bundles. Latchila. If you didn't, again, then what can we do? You fulfilled the mitzvah. That's our Mishnah.
Can I throw it crossed my mind that there maybe is actually a different problem with the bundles, and especially because you pointed out that they define the bundle as 25 sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, if it was because it made too solid a covering.
I was waiting for someone to say that. I really was.
Because, yeah, okay.
And of course, the point is that the Gemara doesn't say what you're suggesting. And we see from there that too solid a covering is not a problem.
Oh.
Say it again.
There's no issue of tzach being too thick, a vimidai. It could be as thick as you want. Except if it becomes a roof.
Right.
Because we said that the mitzvah is to live in a binyan arai, a temporary building. It has to be a building, but it has to be temporary. Now, if your schach is so thick that it actually could be mistaken for a roof, then you're living in a house, you're not living in a sukkah. And then we'll have to define, well, what's the difference between a sukkah and a house, or between schach and a roof? And that's not going to be easy to define. Right? What if I have a roof of my house, and it's made of lumber? And lumber is... No, but lumber is not yet a kli. A roof is a kli. But lumber is just a piece of 2x4s. What's wrong if I nail 2x4s on the top of my sukkah? Right? It grows from the ground, and it's not a kli. And it's... What is lumber?
Yeah.
Boards.
Boards.
Kashim.
Yeah, kashim. What's wrong with that? And that's actually going to be Mishnah Vav. That's going to be the sixth Mishnah. That we're going to talk about right now.
Okay.
Okay. It's a hard question. So let's begin Mishnah Vav, Mishnah 6. And it says, Misakachin b'nisarim. We make schach of lumber. Nisarim are boards. 2x4s. And that's fine. But that's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's the words of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Oser. Rabbi Meir says, no good. It's forbidden. You can't use lumber for your schach. Then it says, Natan Aleha Neser, which is the singular of the word Nisarim, one board. Shehu Rachav Arbat Fachim, which is wide four tfachim. Right? Four tfachim. So about this wide.
Aleha is on the schach.
Very, on the schach is masculine. Aleha is on the sukkah. You put on the sukkah one board. That's about four tfachim wide. Kshira, kosher. Ubilvad shlo yishan taktav. Under condition that you don't sleep underneath the one board.
If it's kosher, so why I can't sleep there?
Seems contradictory, you're right. This is a very difficult Mishnah. So I have no less than 11 questions on this one Mishnah. So let's look at these questions. I'll just say it again. It began by saying that you can use boards for schach according to Rabbi Yehuda, but not according to Rabbi Meir. And then it said, if you put one board, even if it's four tfachim wide, it's kosher, but you can't sleep underneath it. Questions. Number one, do you think that Nisarim are in the category of Kol Shehu Mikabel Tuma, anything that is susceptible to ritual impurity? And the answer is no. Because if Rabbi Yehuda says it's kosher,
then it
can't be susceptible to ritual impurity. And again, boards are not a roof. They're not a kli. They're not a vessel. They're just boards. Boards are not susceptible to ritual impurity.
Why do you give Rabbi Yehuda more clout than Rabbi Meir?
Because if they were susceptible to ritual impurity, then it couldn't be that there's one opinion. No one could say that it's kosher.
Rabbi Meir's rule is not because of that.
Right, it must be for different reasons it's forbidding it. It can't be something so simple as that. So these boards are kosher as far as that goes. They're not susceptible to ritual impurity. Question two. What does this Mishnah have in common with the previous Mishnah? So I'm gonna, it's a little bit late, so I'm gonna give you the answer.
Maybe you have to put river?
No. I simply mean that we're talking about a second story of problem or issue. It's not a basic issue of a deraita that one of the basic rules has been violated. It's going to be a derabbanan. Even though the boards are kosher, it just doesn't look good for some reason. We'll see. Just like the chavilot didn't look good. It looked just like the bundles didn't look good. It was some type of gzera derabbanan. Mishnah and Mishnah Vav are both talking about Gzera, the Rabbanan, as we're about to see. So why do you think it's unacceptable to use Nisarim for Schach? Well, it looks like a roof. It looks like a roof. Not that it is a roof, but that it looks like a roof. When the Mishnah uses the preposition Aleya, to what is the reference? The reference is to the Sukkah. You put on your sukkah one board. Question five. Clearly, when the Mishnah writes arba tefachim, right, four, not hand breaths, four fist breaths, which is what in English? Every week I ask, I can't remember the word in English. No, there's a word in English.
Fist.
Four fists, whatever it is a better word. It does not mean that the neser is specifically that length. Rather, what exactly does it mean?
It's just very wide. It's
not more than that.
Well, the opposite.
Or not less than that.
More than that. In other words, which is, if you put in a board that is four cubits, that's what I was looking for. No, it's not cubits? Okay. Four fists.
Hand breath is what we say.
Hand breath is
that's
what
how
we
it's
can say.
Translated usually.
Yeah, I've always seen it translated.
A breadth of your hand.
It's the breadth of the hand.
Oh, this is a hand breath.
Yeah.
This is
a cubit.
Oh, this is a cubit. This is a
cubit. This is a hand breath. Is a hand breath.
Okay. So it says that if you put a board that is four hand breaths wide, it's kosher as long as you don't sleep underneath it. It means four or more. Four or more.
So you could put a whole piece of plywood on.
Four or more.
And it's kosher as long as you don't sleep underneath it.
Yeah, but you've got the issue of...
Wait a second. Of course, that brings us back to what Ayala said. What do you mean it's kosher if you can't sleep underneath it? That's it's like saying that it's kosher, that this food is kosher, but it's forbidden to eat it.
Yeah.
What do you mean it's kosher? So it's
the building is kosher. The sukkah is you have built your sukkah.
But you can't sleep in it.
Well, you can't sleep under that board.
Okay.
So
okay. Which means that what we're saying is this one board doesn't disqualify the rest of the sukkah.
Yeah.
So we're assuming that there's kosher schach in addition to the one board.
Yeah.
That was another question I asked here.
But why are you saying that it has to be...
Not that it has to
more
be.
More than.
But when it says... As long as you don't sleep under it, that applies to a board that's four and also to a board that's five and six. Don't sleep under it. It doesn't apply to a board that's only three or two or one. There you can sleep under it.
But you can't use wooden planks at
all. You can't use wooden planks in the plural.
Okay.
It's going to be complicated. I admit this is complicated.
Okay.
We'll go step by step.
I thought it was defining what a plank is. Less than four is not a plank.
Okay. So let's wait for that.
Okay.
Question six. When the Mishnah declares kshera, what unmentioned condition is apparently assumed to have been met? And that is that besides the one plank, apparently there are this kosher schach.
Yeah.
Question seven. When the Mishnah says yeshen, sleep, right? You can't sleep under the one board that's four or more. This is presumably just an example of a category that includes what other activities as well?
Eating.
Anything, right? It's simply an example. Of something that you do in usually in one place, right? You can't sleep under it, but you can't do anything else as well. It's just an example. And then question eight, if indeed lo yishen tachtav, if you can't sleep underneath it, in what sense is it kosher? And it has to be that the rest of the sukkah is kosher, and the point really is that this one board doesn't disqualify the whole sukkah. It gets a question of proportions, right? So this board doesn't disqualify it, but the board itself is not kosher, right? You can't sleep underneath it. So really, this is what it really means is it's not kosher. Mm-hmm. Even though it says that it's kosher. It's not kosher, but it doesn't disqualify the rest of the sukkah as long as the rest of the sukkah is kosher schach. So now finally, those are all details, but now the point is question nine. What are the two issues that must be grappled with in dealing with the relationship between the two halves of this Mishnah? And let's remember, the first half said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can make schach of boards. According to Rabbi Meir, we cannot. That's the first part of the Mishnah. Second part of the Mishnah, it says, if you use one board, which is four or more hand breadths, it's not good to sleep under. In other words, it's not kosher.
This part. That part.
That part is not kosher. So in the beginning of the Mishnah, there was an argument if we can make sukkah, make schach of boards or not. Rabbi Yehuda says yes, Rabbi Meir says no. The second part of the sukkah says one board, that one board is not kosher if it's four or more. So the two big questions here in the relationship between the first part and the second part of the Mishnah again be as follows. The second part said we're talking a board that's four or more. The first part didn't say what dimensions of board. So the question is going to be, in the first part, are we talking about the same dimensions of board as we have in the second part, or different dimensions of board? That's a clear question that we have to ask. The second question we have to ask is the second part of the Mishnah, when it says, if you use the board that's four or more, it's not kosher to sleep underneath it, is that said by one of the two opinions in the first part, or by both of them? So those are the two questions. Is the second part of the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Meir or both? And the other question was, the first part of the Mishnah, is it talking about the same board as far as size goes in the second part, or is it talking about a different size? Those are the two questions that have to be grappled with. And those two questions actually depend one on the other.
Why would you even assume, though, that Rabbi Meir would agree with this dimensions of a board if he says no boards?
He says no boards. When he said no boards, did he mean no boards of four or more, or even no boards of less than four?
Or that the schach can't be made solely of
boards.
What type of boards?
Right.
And for that matter, when does a board become a board? Right, a board this big is a board, and this is a board, and when it gets this small, it's still a board? Or is it a stick? What's a board? Mm.
2x12, 2x6.
Right. What makes a board into a board? What makes a board different than a log? Okay, so since time is short, I'm simply going to give a direction and we'll leave the rest for next week. Direction. So I would say, look at the second part, which begins with the last word of the first line of the Mishnah, Natan Aleha Neser, put on it a board. It doesn't say there that this is one of the two opinions. It's listed as Stam, not designated. And therefore, I would have to assume that it's both opinions.
Because it's the same law.
Again, it doesn't say that it's Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Meir. It's both opinions, I would think. If it's both opinions, then I'm going to extrapolate and say it must be that in the first part of the Mishnah, we're talking about a different size board than in the second part of the Mishnah. Because, right, so I'm going to claim now that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about small boards, less than four. The second part is talking about boards that are bigger than four. That's going to allow me to say that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir can agree with the second part of the Mishnah that says that one board is not kosher. Let me explain. So the first part said that this is a disagreement, if you can use boards or not. Rabbi Yehuda says yes, Rabbi Meir says no, and I'm going to claim this took on small boards, less than four. Rabbi Meir says they're no good. If you use lots of small boards, they're no good. Rabbi Yehuda says they're good. And then the second part of the Mishnah says, but if you used a big board, if you used a big board, now we have a different story. Rabbi Meir, who had said that small boards are no good, he's going to agree that one big board is also no good. And Rabbi Yehuda, that had allowed small boards, is going to say, but if it's a big board, even one of them, that's a different story, that's no good. In other words, by saying that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about different boards in the second part, we can allow that the second part is going to be according to both opinions. Whereas, now I'll say what's probably not true. If we had said the first part is talking about big boards, the same big boards as the end of the Mishnah, then I couldn't understand how the second part fits according to both opinions. It couldn't work. Why couldn't it work? Because if Rabbi Yehuda had said, you can do it with boards, and he was talking about big boards, he says you can make your sukkah with big boards, of four or more, then why would it say in the second half that if you use even one big board, you couldn't sleep under it? It rather must be that Rabbi Yehuda said you can use small boards, but when it comes to big boards, then you can't sleep under it. So that's the direction we'll take next week, that there are two questions in the relationship between part one and part two. One is, what size boards is it in the first part? And the other question is, who says the second part? Is it both opinions or is it only one?
Why would you put a wide board on if you couldn't essentially have a functional sukkah function, sleep under it or whatever? What would be the purpose of having something like that up there to begin with?
Well, it doesn't say you should do it. It says if you did it. Right? Natan Aleha Neser. If you put there a wide board, if you put it. Mm-hmm. Right? Kshera, meaning the sukkah, hasn't been disqualified, but you're right, that board, there was no point in putting it there because you can't sleep under it. So it might be that you don't have enough kosher schach.
Yeah.
You only have for 90%. So 10%, you can put this board here, and it doesn't disqualify your sukkah.
Do you need to have the 10% covered, or can you? Is your
very good question.
Valid if you don't.
You can't have more sun than shade.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But so if you spread out all your stock, you wouldn't have enough shade. So push it together and put your board here on the side where nobody's going to sit or sleep.
can get a little bit more
I mean,
shade.
But what about shade that's made from non-kosher schach? Is that considered to be shade, or is it?
It's okay. It's permitted. You just can't sleep under it.
Huh. It doesn't say permitted. It says if you did it, it's kshera. Why would you do it? There's no reason. It might be there's no reason to do it, but you did it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it was said that a partial disqualification. A partial disqualification that doesn't destroy
the rest of the sukkah.
Attributes of the rest.
Okay, right. That's the point.
So 3/4 of the sukkah is kosher. 1/4 is not kosher.
Okay.
Except if that quarter is the quarter that makes it big enough to qualify, because there's
okay, right? There's enough. Lots of questions that can be asked. Okay, so I think we'll stop there.
I sure don't see why you read 4 more. It's obviously because of from some other sources, but
I don't know. I think
because to me, when it starts saying cover with wooden planks,
I'm going to buy a prefab.
It means a lot of
it.
Right. Right.
And I'm going to say, he says, I don't care what size they are.
Okay, okay.
And Rabbi Mayer says,
but I don't care means even small.
No, even big.
Or even big.
And okay. Rabbi Mayer says, no, I especially don't like big. But if it's one that's
small. What do you mean especially don't like big?
Rabbi Mayer doesn't approve of big boards.
But if it was smaller ones, it would be okay.
Yeah, I said, but if there's a board, no more than 4 hands breadths, that's okay. And so both are agreeing to the 4 hand breadths board are smaller is okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to think about that. Certainly not what the Gemara says. I think the answer to what you're saying is that 4 tefachim in halach is usually the beginning of a category. Anything less than 4 tefachim is one category, but 4 begins a new category.
A roof. That's why, I mean, to me it's a real roof. Whereas, like you said, how do you tell the difference between just a stick and a plank?
Right.
Well, it's bigger, bigger, bigger.
Right.
So when it gets too big, now it's become a plank, you can't do it, it's a roof.
Okay, so which means that applies to anything that big, or certainly applies to something bigger than that.
Right, it's not permitted. So now think about that and read it. So it's, Rabbi Yehuda says you can cover with wooden planks, even big ones. He's a radical. Rabbi Meyer says, no, you can't. It looks like wood, it looks like a roof. And then there's the concession and the compromise. Okay, a board... No more than 4 hand breadths. Okay, that's not a roof. That's small enough. And so it's that's okay. But Rabbi Meyer says, but still, I don't want you sleeping under it.
Okay, I'll think about it. I'll sleep under it.